We're running the way to Manchester. The Manchester was so nasty. And his
William Manchester.
I said, well, I never run into William Manchester. Where he got the information from that he described in his book, I'll never know. He said, no, you're not like that at all. He said, I just envisioned some old bean individual.
Yeah.
Because Manchester had described me as the white starched dragon and the rubber shod shoes in his book. It sounded like Jackie and I had a fight match, which we didn't at all.
It, you know? Had you met his wife then? You met Mrs. Kennedy?
She was, yeah. I met everybody.
Really? You're a fantastic individual. When I heard that there was somebody actually here that present that day, and you know, I was just like, you know.
I'll give you a brief scenario of what happened.
Okay.
You turn your tape recorder on since you're such an avid collector.
Thank you.
This will, yeah, I was going to say, this tape won't go anywhere but in that room.
Several of the nurses in the emergency room were at lunch, and we were all talking about Kennedy being in town, and I said, well, he's probably in the parade route, and it was about 12:15, and someone said, suppose he's in a car wreck, and I said, oh, they'd never bring him to Parkland. At that time, they didn't make all these pre-arrangements for visiting dignitaries like they do now for all the presidents and stuff, so I had, no, there was no arrangements made with us by the Secret Service prior to his arrival. I said, oh, they'd probably take him to Baylor. Baylor is one of the largest private hospitals in the city. So I walked back into the emergency room from lunch and into the surgical area, and the phone was ringing. And I picked up the phone, and I said, surgery emergency room, Miss Nelson. And the operator said, Doris, the president's been shot and will be there in 5 minutes. I said, yeah, Phyllis, what else is new today? You know, something like this just doesn't click in your mind. But I know, she said, I've got to go. I've got to call some doctors, and I knew it was real. So I grabbed the head nurse and one of the surgery doctors, and I told them to get the trauma room set up, make sure everything was ready because the president would be here in 5 minutes. Well, it was difficult to convince them too. So I went out and saw another doctor coming down the hall, so I grabbed him too. And so they were all there waiting when he came in. We have what we call a triage system where a nurse sits at the front desk. And she sees every patient that comes into the emergency room and determines their priority of care and their chief complaint. Well, I didn't have time to tell her that the president had been shot. So when they came in, there was no stretchers out on the dock because he was still in the limousine when they brought him in. And they needed stretchers, so the Secret Service agents came running in the door, and of course they were just frantic, you know, just. They had guns with them and all this stuff. Just scared that poor nurse to death.
Oh,
she
did, my Lord.
She didn't know what was going on. She thought a bunch of wild men had gotten loose because she didn't know the president had been shot was coming in. So when they wheeled in, they wheeled Connolly in first, and he was in the jump seat, and so he was the first one taken out. I was fairly new in Texas. I'd been here about 8 months. I didn't know who it was, but I figured he must be important if he'd gotten shot with Kennedy. So he looked rather pale, and I noticed he had a blood stain on his shirt. So you know how you just take a shirt and rip it, pop all the buttons off. Because it was my responsibility to see that the right doctors got in the right rooms to treat the right type of injuries and stuff like this. So I saw that he had a huge wound in his chest, and I figured that was his most significant wound. So when the chest surgeon arrived, that was the one I was going to put in the room with him. So shortly after he came in, by right behind him, they brought Kennedy on a stretcher, and they had a coat thrown over his head, and Jackie had her roses laying on his body, and she was walking beside the car with Secret Service agents pushing it. We put him in too, and I tried to, several doctors came down, they were in the room with him, and they attempted a tracheotomy because he had apparently a bullet in his went in his back and came out his throat, went in his throat and came out his back. So they were doing a trach on him and all those. Everything they was doing were just life-saving measures, but he was essentially dead when he got here, because he had a large portion of his brain that had been blown off right about in this area, with brain matter protruding from his head by the time that he came in here. Anyway, Jackie wanted to go in the room where they were doing the trach, and I told her I thought that You know, they were, the ring was just full of doctors, you know, they were all so busy working. I thought it best that she not do it, you know. And she thought it best that she would. So, so some Secret Service agent informed me that she could do whatever she wanted to do. I said, you got the gun, I don't.
And,
so I threw her roses in the garbage can and went home and soaked his blood out of my uniform like a fool I could have.
Yeah.
Yeah, soaked it all night, but he was essentially dead. There was no way he could have lived with the type of injuries that he had when he came in here. Mm-hmm. And one of the nurses, they were starting IVs and on his arm, took his watch off. For lack of any place else to put it, so it wouldn't get misplaced, she stuck it in her pocket. And then after they left and go back to the airport, she looked and said, oh, my Lord, I got the president's watch. So I said, well, it's no problem. We'll just turn in security and then give it back to the Secret Service.
That must have been a day here.
Well, it wasn't so bad at that time because we were pretty well, you know, confined to outside people because of the Secret Service closing off all the entrance ways except for true emergency patients that needed to come in. But it was the news media afterwards, you know, someone had to be here 24 hours a day because otherwise they were constantly trying to get in the emergency room and take pictures and get in your way. And I mean, we were a busy emergency room. We had to carry, we had to keep all these people out so we could take care of our patients that were coming in.
Because
at that time we were seeing about 350 patients in a 24-hour period. Now we see in excess of 500 to 600 in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't long after that day that a lot of you people, including yourself, got burned out on these. You know, you see on TV.
Well, for several years we didn't talk to the news or anyone about it. Because everyone wrote up what their participation was in the incident, and it was sent to the administrator, and anything that anyone wanted to know, they got it from the administrator's office. Because you, no matter where you go now, if you run into someone that ever worked at Parkland, they were here when the president was shot, and they took care of him.
Yeah.
And I've heard more people say they took care of the president that I've never seen and never heard of before in my life, and I know that they're liars, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody takes care of the president. If you ever been to Parkland, you took care of the president.
Well, to be honest with you, I was kind of surprised that I would find somebody that was still here, you know, cause that's almost 20 years ago, you know.
I've been here 20 years last September.
Really?
Where'd you come from?
I originally came from Miami, and but I'm from North Carolina.
Oh, I see.
Better turn your tape on.
Yeah.
Doris Nelson, registered nurse at Parkland Memorial Hospital. Time now is 1:15 p.m., December 29th, 1982.
The preceding was a personal interview between Mrs. Doris Nelson, RN of Parkland Memorial Hospital, Dallas, Texas, and David E. Hall of Traverse City, Michigan, on December 29, 1982 at 1 p.m. Subject, President John F. Kennedy and his care/treatment upon his arrival at Parkland Hospital on Friday, November 22, 1963. Mrs. Doris Nelson, RN, was in charge of the emergency room at Parkland Memorial Hospital on November 22, 1963. The preceding taped interview was at Parkland at the date and time mentioned. I was extremely fortunate to obtain this interview, as I had been told by her secretary that Doris rarely speaks of this subject and has turned away hundreds of requests. The recording starts at the point where Doris is discussing a conversation she had had at her office just prior to my arrival. The exact date and time were not mentioned by Doris, with a Mr. David Lifton. He had stopped by to give her an autographed copy of his newly released book entitled Best Evidence. She said she had been interviewed by Mr. Lifton for his book and asked if I had read it yet. I indicated that I had just purchased a copy in my hometown of Traverse City, Michigan, and was reading it while on my trip to Dallas. She said she felt his book was in, quote, accurate and historically factual account of the president's assassination as had been written at that time," end quote. As the tape begins, she is in the middle of her story about Mr. Lifton, describing how William Manchester gave her a very negative description of herself in his book, Death of a President. She states, in fact, that Mr. Manchester never had spoken with her. The postscript regards to this interview. "Not wanting to say or ask anything that might have caused Mrs. Nelson any discomfort, I did not ask many questions. I was eager to hear her story. At the end of the interview, after she suggested I turn my tape off, conversation ensued for a while. I asked if she had been interviewed by the Warren Commission. She responded in the affirmative but gave no indication of wanting to discuss this topic. I told her of my admiration of President Kennedy, that I had started a Kennedy library on him at the age of 8 years old in 1959. I spoke of my desire for the past 19 years to come to Dallas and visit Dealey Plaza and Parkland Memorial Hospital. She asked me questions about my background. I told her I grew up in rural northern Michigan, graduating from high school in 1969, was drafted in 1970, spent 2 years in the military, and was honorably discharged in 1972. Since that time, I had worked for the next 10 years as a child care worker, youth specialist for the Michigan Department of Mental Health and Department of Social Services. After an enjoyable chat, she mentioned that all Parkland employees who were on duty November 22nd through the 24th, 1963, received a special Parkland Highlights bulletin published by the hospital regarding all the goings-on during those 3 days of history in the making at the hospital. She said she thought she still had her copy of the paper and wondered if I'd like to have her copy for my library. I, of course, responded that I would be delighted. She continued to search through her desk as we continued to chat. Fearing I had taken up too much of her time already, I suggested that I could leave her my address and she could send it to me if she happened to find it. At that point, she looked up from her desk and asked me if I were in a hurry to leave. I responded no, but that I didn't wish to take up any more of her time. Doris was a chief administrator in charge of a large part of Parkland Hospital at the time I met with her. She responded by saying that, "Well, I'm having a good time if you are, so I'm in no hurry." As we continued to talk, she found the paper, of which she had kept for over 19 years, and handed it to me across her desk. I glanced through the pages, and as I did, the thought that raced through my mind was, after all these years, and of all people in the world, why would she give me this cherished possession? I looked back across the desk and said, "I can't take your paper." She, at first, looked puzzled, then appeared to understand. I said, "You were the one in charge the day the president was brought into your hospital, mortally wounded from assassin's bullets. You were one of the last people to ever see him, and obviously this paper has meant a great deal to you to have kept it all these years. I can't take your paper." I then asked her if she had access to a copy machine, which she indicated she did. I asked her if she would be kind enough to make me a copy of her paper, and that I would love to have that for my library. She departed briefly and returned with my copy. We then shook hands. I expressed my gratitude for her time and willingness to share her story with me and said our goodbyes. Needless to say, this will be a moment I will always treasure. Doris died less than a year after our enjoyable and memorable encounter that rather brisk but sunny afternoon. I always meant to write and thank her once again for sharing those special memories, the last moments of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy's life. I learned a very valuable lesson about procrastination. Mrs. Doris Nelson, registered nurse of Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas, Texas. What a special lady. She'll be sorely missed. Compiled by Mr. David E. Hall, formerly of Traverse City, Michigan. Current address, 160 Barrett Avenue, Evanston, Wyoming. Zip code 82930. Phone number, area code 307-789-0853. And